Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by Cody and Bo, my co-hosts. How you doing, Cody?
You still can't find anyone to replace us, so we're still here, Pat.
That's right.
Doing great.
The search continues. We've got Matt, our engineer, on, and we've got Karen in studio, who's keeping me on track. And Cody, what's our topic today?
It's called principle over policy.
That's right. Principle over policy. Now, before we go any further, I want to say, hey, our last episode, what was the title of the last one? It was, what was it, Matt?
Laying off wisely or something like that.
Yeah. Lay off wisely.
Right. Yeah. Our audio didn't work very well. And I sounded like I was doing it in a bathroom, like I was sitting on a toilet doing the podcast. I would never do that. I mean, not until Matt hooks up really good equipment in a bathroom could I ever do that. But it sounded like an echoey, and we just had some audio problems. But anyway, just wanted to let you know that. So principle over policy. This is one I really feel strongly about. We feel pretty strongly about all of them that we do. And here's what it means. Basically, it's the same as culture is more important than rules. And if you have an organization, both in the way you treat your employees and the way you treat your customers, it's better to have a principle and say, this is what we believe, and then give people the freedom to act within that principle than to define everything by very clear rules and treat them as though you expect them to break the rules. Mm-hmm. So what we end up doing is we make our customers feel like, and our employees feel sometimes like they're criminals or they're dishonest by trying to catch them doing the wrong thing. And this is a really bad way to run a business internally or externally.
Hmm. It is. And you're right. It's like people eventually become who you assume that they are, right? If we assume that our employees are going to violate a sick policy, and so we make our sick policy 107 bullet points, well, eventually you're going to attract the sort of people, you know what I mean, who are, well, tell me what you think about that. As I'm saying that, it maybe sounds a little bit extreme, but I've worked in organizations where there is a sick policy, and that always seemed so ridiculous to me. It's like, if you're sick, don't come to work. Get better.
Right. Well, I think the sick policy is a great one because it's like you have 12 sick days this year at most. Well, then you the year's coming. Yeah, Karen looked at me. Yeah, I remember companies that had that. And then you get toward the end of the year and you go, I haven't used all my sick days. I think I will. And the idea of sick days, it's not vacation. It's that if you're sick, and if someone's sick 15 times in the year, they shouldn't have to pay for that. If somebody else is sick five times, it's not a It's about treating them like a human being. Mm-hmm. The one, and we realize you have to do this reasonably, right? Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, err on the side of giving people freedom based around a principle and hire people that are responsible adults who want to do the right thing and then treat them that way.
Yeah, it's interesting, Pat. You talked about how this is really a culture over rules type of policy. But what happens is if you have rules and policies rather than principle and culture, then you develop a culture around those rules and policies. It's like people figure out a way to game the system. Like, oh, I wasn't sick this year, so I'm going to take 2 sick days and 3 vacation days and stretch it out. And so there, it does actually end up creating a culture. It's just not the one that you were hoping that actually reinforced the spirit of it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, I think too many rules doesn't teach us to pay attention to context, because behavior does change based on context, doesn't it? We give a lot of parenting examples here, but one for us is, as a family, for us, we kind of have one rule, and we talk about it all the time. Our rule is consider others. So we don't have a rule that you can't jump on the couch, because sometimes you can jump on the couch, and we don't have a rule that, you know, you can't draw on the walls, because it's like, if you just think through the lens of consider others, you'll be able to come to that conclusion on your own. I actually think there's a university, I was just thinking about this, I think it's called Wabash College, and their student code of conduct is one rule. And it is, it's
don't talk about Fight Club. I'm sorry. That was the only chance I could get that in there, but go ahead. What was it?
I think their number one rule is something like, behave as a gentleman at all times. It's an all-male college. Isn't that kind of great?
Yeah, I like it. Well, see, let's talk about this. I love this. And we need to get Tracy back. She's going to be back soon, because we're like, don't talk about Fight Club. Rule number two, don't talk about Wabash College. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. When we do that, so let's say like we have a rule at our company, we're relatively small, that we don't have a vacation policy. Like, be reasonable, know what your colleagues are doing. But if you need to go vacation, your family's doing, just use what you need. We're hiring a guy. I was talking to him 2 nights ago and he was all nervous. And he goes, how does that work? Like, I'm kind of at a place in my life where I'd like to go on vacation maybe a week every quarter. If I did that, and I'd be like, hey, if your work allows you to do that and you work it out with your colleagues and that's something you want to do, that would be great. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, now a lawyer might come along in a relatively large company and say, or an HR person and say, somebody's going to take advantage of that policy. Let's not have an open policy. Let's actually define it very concretely so that people don't take advantage of it.
Yep.
Well, why not assume that most people are going to do the right thing, and then when somebody takes advantage of it, address that rather than treat everybody like they're going to take advantage of it. Avoiding somebody taking advantage of something at the expense of treating everybody else like their children is a really bad idea.
I love that you get to the essence of why these things happen, Pat, because it really is. Most policies happen because you're protecting yourself from the least common denominator, like the one person that might have taken advantage of that. Or, you know, like to think of this in your personal life would be insane, to be like, well, I dated this girl and then she broke up with me for this reason. I'll never dating again. You know, it's like, no, that's not the point. You don't just make a dating policy where you're never dating again. Like, that's not the way you do that. You put in place sort of these parameters around why did that happen, instead of saying a blanket policy, you know, because of one person that hurt another person or that took advantage of it.
Or better yet, and she cheated on me, so I'm going to hook cameras up to her apartment. So when anybody, like, no, you're not going to trust anyone because right. one person wasn't worthy of your trust. And I don't want to dog on lawyers. I know with some lawyers who listen to this, the idea is a lawyer's job is to prevent and mitigate risk in many cases in a company. The leader then has to go, okay, I would rather risk this happening and address it than prevent all risk at the expense of the culture. That's what we're saying.
So I think another reason that we default to policies instead of principles is policies are pretty easy to define. They're pretty easy to be able to come up with in a committee and say, well, this would be kind of reasonable and this would be standard, best practices, what everybody else does. Principles are a bit harder to define, aren't they? So Pat, if you think about that a culture is going to be defined by principles over policies, how does somebody begin to describe or lay out what those principles will be?
Well, and it's going to depend on each company, but like here, and I've worked with other companies that said, we want you to treat the company as if you were an owner. We want you to take everything we do like it's personal to you. I like that. Care like it's personal to you. Well, you can't ask somebody to do that and then say, but when it comes to making personal decisions, we're going to tell you exactly how to do that, right? So to me, it's almost like we want you to be responsible. We want you to care about that customer because they're your customer. And so we're going to treat you like you're part of the ownership of this company and you get to make decisions for yourself.
You know, and the other thing I'd add, Pat, is, and this comes up in the conversations that we have as we're helping organizations become healthy organizations, is that we very regularly say healthy organizations are kind of messy. They're not the most clean and tidy organizations. They're a little bit messy, both in their behaviors, because we're talking about how we get people to work together and have good conflict. But even as it goes towards their policies and procedures, like the institutionalizing of their culture. And you use this great line, Pat, regularly. I think it's in the advantage of, once you have your clarity, your answer to the six critical questions about who we are and how we behave and how we're going to succeed, then you institutionalize your culture without bureaucratizing it. You know, like there's a way, the principle really is, how do we over communicate our clarity in a way that people get it in their gut, to the point where we don't have to write a 100-page policy manual around those things that are just the policy. And I get it. There's probably people listening to this like, hey, I work at a 10,000 person organization. That's just not possible. And at some point it does have to tip the scales a little bit. But the idea of institutionalizing it is really about people getting it in their core, in their guts. And that comes from over communicating it, reinforcing it. So when you are hiring that person, Pat, and you say, hey, as long as you get your work done, you talk to your colleagues, like, yeah, that sounds great. And then every time that you're having that conversation, you're reinforcing it. That's what makes it more a cultural thing and less of a policy thing.
Got it. You know, and I'm glad you said that, because we're not trying to tell you that you can't have policies. And we're not going to tell you that, hey, just leave everything to chance. And yeah, a huge company might not be able to say, hey, everybody just go on vacation whenever you want. But it's okay to say, we come to work. We're going to be a company that comes to work. If you have something going on and you can get your work done and you need to stay home in the morning or you need to do something remotely, that's fine. But generally speaking, we think you're supposed to be here. Then let them make decisions about the exceptional times. And you know, we have one here at our company. When people have a baby, we tell the woman, it sounds like they're generic. Tracy, Karen have had babies here. We say, hey, take the time you need before you come back to work. And I remember somebody once said, well, aren't you afraid they're going to take advantage of it? And it's like, no, in fact, they'll be doing work from home long before the minimal period would be, because they care about work. And as a result of giving them more leeway, they'll return that in spades and we'll create a culture of trust and that we're more concerned about them than we are about the rules. That was a very long and winded way to say it. But the point is, it actually benefits the company and you'll get more loyalty and work from your people.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm thinking about is, as you onboard new employees, sometimes for them, it does feel a bit safer to have kind of more defined guardrails of, hey, come to the office at 8:30, or, you know, here's how we think about long week, whatever. And I think that you can still do both. It's okay, like Cody said, if you have a 10,000 person organization, you're probably going to have some rules. But when you're onboarding new people, it's so helpful to interpret why you have the rules you have and why you're making the decisions you make. So for example, you might say, hey, here's why most people get to the office by 8:30, because we have a culture of hustle. Or you might say, hey, here's why we take the last week off of the year, is because we're a culture that really wants to be able to rest and prioritize family. There might be a policy for a reason. Let's make sure we keep saying the principle when we're explaining the policy.
Yeah, and as Matt said before we started, he said policies actually inform your culture. So you don't want the policy itself to be, explain why you put that in place and let people know it's not there to limit your freedom. It's there to give you understanding, but come talk to us if there's something. I hate the idea of somebody coming to work because they're out of vacation days and they're sick. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, as you guys are having this conversation, I love that onboarding conversation language around, like, reinforce that. It kind of occurred to me, do you think that some people have policies for the sake of not having to have uncomfortable management conversations? Like, it's like, oh, hey, you know, and I think about this really great story, Pat, and I'll try to keep the people somewhat anonymous, but we met a leader, and I tell this story regularly, who got invited to be a member at Augusta, you know, which is like, you know, this tradition. And so there's another person that was in his class.
Follow golf. That's where the Masters is played every year. It's the most prestigious, kind of mysterious golf club and people that love golf, Augusta would, you know, it's like getting let into the inner chamber of wonder of golf.
Right. And so he described this story of his sort of initiation into this culture around the Masters in Augusta. And another person, you know, a famous like sports leader that was getting inducted at the same time, went up to the chairman after the meeting was over and said, Mr. Chairman, I love following the rules. I'm a sports guy. Can you give me, is there like a book where I could see all the rules? Because I just so thrilled to be here. I don't want to violate any of the rules. And he put his hand on his shoulder and said, hey, we'll let you know if you're out of line. And what I loved about that is sort of like, they're willing to have the uncomfortable conversation. Policy and a book that says, here are the rules, might be a way of sort of abdicating the responsibility to have those difficult conversations around like, hey, you know, that last vacation you took, like, I don't feel like you left your people in the right spot. Let's have a conversation about that. That's a hard, uncomfortable conversation. And some people think it's a lot cleaner to just say, well, you don't have any more vacation days. So that's the end of that.
You know, I love that story, Cody. it's kind of like marriage. It's like, okay, if Laura and I said, okay, you get to go out 3 nights a week, and but you have to stay home with me 4. And it's like, wait a second, is the principle like, I hope you would rather be with me than anyone else. And if one week you go out 5 times, it's not because you don't care about me. And right. If another week you go out 1, you're not going to be like, how am I going to get those other 3 days back? Now, we would never do that in our marriage, I hope. We shouldn't do it at work either. And you know how I love to talk about this? I love to take it into how we treat our customers too. Because I believe that you should do the same thing with your customers. But before we do that, I want to deliver on a promise we've been making and not always keeping, and that's do a commercial, an unpaid advertisement for something that is really important to me and really controversial. Matt, what is our unpaid ad for today?
Today, our unpaid ad is for cream soda. No specific brand, but I have a couple in mind because I share the same affinity for it that you do.
Cream soda is delicious. We're very pro cream soda here. And I'm having some right now as we speak. I have some in my cup. I love cream soda. Matt, let's take a risk here. What are your favorite brands?
All right. A&W is great.
That's what I'm having right now.
A&W. More of a soda. Yeah. And then Boylan's is less carbonated. Comes in a glass bottle. It's really nice. That one is probably... These are my top three, A&W, Boylan's, and IBC. IBC also comes in a bottle. It's a smaller bottle, so you don't get as much cream soda, but it's fantastic.
This is a great segment, Pat, because I did some demographic studies of our listeners, and they're all between 7 and 12-year-old boys. They're going to get a really good idea of the best cream sodas out there.
Bo said, it's too sweet.
It's so sweet. Who can drink a whole glass of cream soda?
I can't imagine.
I don't know who could only drink one.
Cream soda is to soft drinks what port is to wine.
They just took all the flavor out of root beer and added in more sugar.
Yeah, you know what I think is funny? I just got this cream soda because Matt brought it in because I did a session for a bunch of lacrosse kids in my office yesterday. And it says on there, naturally and artificially sweetened. And I thought, wow, of course it's artificially sweetened. What is cream soda made of? We went to the finest cream soda bush in the world and sourced only the most natural cream soda berries to make this. Anyway, I'm a big cream soda fan. And so let's go on and talk about how do we treat our customers like they're adults, like we trust them, like we care about them, even at the expense of them potentially taking advantage of it. Now, Cody and Bo, can you tell us a story about our company and what happened to us recently in this regard?
Sure. So we had an event, as I think is what you're referring to, the last summer to celebrate the anniversary of the 5 dysfunctions of a team. And we charged for that event and people signed up and we were processing with the folks who were doing all the, you know, behind the scenes work for us. They're like, okay, so we're going to send everybody a validation code so that they're going to get a unique link because we don't want anybody sneaking into the event. And we sat around and we're like,
to be clear, that was the tech vendor's way of helping us protect our event. That was not us saying, let's set those parameters.
Right. So that's what I was just going to say is they came back to us and so then we're like, really? Like that sounds extra cumbersome for our user. And wouldn't we rather have a few extra people copy the link and send it to their aunt to get them in or God forbid, watch with their whole team when it's an event about teamwork, then, you know, I would take that risk over the frustration that it might cause everybody to have to go through that process.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, that's not to say that we're going to make people pay and then say, if you want to come free, here's what you do. But if a dozen people took advantage of our open policy, that would be okay. So what happened as a result?
Do I have to answer?
We accidentally locked out a couple thousand people from getting into that event. So it wasn't the best experience for many people as opposed to the 12 people that might have snuck in with a different link.
Well, at least nobody snuck in.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when you have the experience at a restaurant or somewhere and, you know, they give you free samples or something, it's so much better. Isn't it so much better to have that experience and the person's like, oh, sorry, we don't do that because one out of 40 people is going to take 40 samples or return the shirt, you know, 31 days after they bought the shirt. And you just feel like you're being treated like an adult, don't you?
Nordstrom is my favorite example of this. For years, Nordstrom has been saying, bring something back, we will exchange it for a new one. We will. And if something's defective, we'll do that. And the reason they did that is because they knew people being trusted was going to create more brand loyalty than anything else. And of course, of course, you know, somebody there that probably was like, you know, people are going to take advantage of that. And they probably said, of course they are. But most people are going to buy 12 times as many things over the course of the year because of the way we treat them, and it will be worth it. In fact, we're going to celebrate when people take advantage of it just to prove how important it is. And so the great story is Nordstrom went and set up a store, and evidently there was a tire shop in that building before. And some guy rolls in a tire, smiling, and says, hey, I bought this here when it was a tire shop. It's defective. I think you should replace it for me. And you know what they did? They did.
Yep.
So they could tell the story. And people, and they told people this during orientation. They told people this in the press. What they were trying to say is, look how we treat customers, even when they're jokingly taking advantage of us. That benefited that company so much more than preventing that from happening.
Yeah, and a phrase you just used there, Pat, was when you trust your customers, you're creating this brand loyalty. And it's the same thing with your employees. I think that's what it is. That word trust is like, we trust you. We don't need to put all of these policies in place. And when you afford trust to other people, it's more reciprocated, you know, rather than it being like a policy driven thing. So you're in some ways you're trusting your employees to do the right thing. You're trusting your customers that like, hey, if I get a pair of shoes and I wore them out in the mud, and then I realized after that that they didn't fit, I hope that the majority of people are not going to just throw them muddy back in a box and return them, because that's not the right thing to do. And so if there's one person that does that, we got burned. But for the most part, it creates that level of trust both internally and externally when you treat people with respect.
Right.
Yeah, trust gets a great return on investment, doesn't it? And it's easy to focus on the one out of, in fact, it'd be an interesting exercise. How many people out of 100 will take advantage of that? And then, you know, what is it? 15% at the most? It's probably closer to 1% to 3% of people who will take advantage of it. And the benefit to the other 98% is still such a great return on investment.
Oh my gosh. And you can't quantify that benefit, but it's so real. I mean, if somebody said, exactly how much business did you get Nordstrom from doing that? They would say, I don't know, tons. So a dear friend, God rest his soul, Michael Lorsch, a friend of ours, and I heard this at his funeral. It was such a great story. Michael was a great guy. And so he actually bought this remote controlled airplane, right? And the company said, we will replace it for life if it ever breaks. And Michael was a great guy, but like me, he wasn't very mechanically oriented, and they would fly it and it would break. And they'd put it in the box and send it back to the manufacturer, and he'd get a new one. And this happened five times. He wasn't doing it on purpose. He wasn't like, hey, watch, we're going to fly it into a wall. Very few people are like that. And after like seven times, the company sent the plane back and said, hey, we'll keep doing this, but we're wondering if maybe you shouldn't find another hobby. You know, so even in that case, they were just kind of like, I don't know if this is the hobby for you. But the point here is not that you're not going to be reasonable. That was when they were over the top. Matt, you didn't know I was going to ask you this. Matt went to a movie theater in Berkeley the other night, and tell us what they charged you. This I think is silly.
It was pay what you want. It was like, I forget what they called it. It had some funky name, but in relation to this, I think people probably paid more than what the ticket would cost normally.
Do you pay after you see the movie? That might be the way to do it, right? It's like, oh boy, that new Marvel movie. No, thank you. No, I'm teasing.
You pay before. And we actually bought the tickets online, so we had to pay the normal price. And to be fair, that's probably what I would have paid had I been given the option.
So even that's kind of an extreme example, but I think it's kind of interesting. But what I'm trying to say is most people know there's a price to get in, and there's a price to do this. But Like, you could also hire security guards at a movie theater, make sure a 16-year-old didn't let his friend in the back door, and realize, you know, we have about a 5,000% margin on Cokes. I think if a kid sneaks in and buys some snacks, we're going to be okay. The point is, trust that it's better to err on the side of trusting people than it is on preventing an exception from happening. And I think that benefits your business, it benefits your people, and even your employees, I mean, are going to be so much happier as a result of that. And I think that brings us to the end of our podcast. All right. Thanks, everybody, for being on. That was fun. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. Remember to go out and get yourself a nice glass of cream soda. And we'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.